Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? It's the dog days of the summer. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, it's we're past the trade deadline, so just trying to soak in all the transactions and the ramifications behind the transactions. And I know for me, like, this past weekend's always the big, the big fab weekend, I guess. Like, a lot of, role changes from all the trades. And I feel like that's kind of your last time, if you're still sitting on fab, to, make some moves. We saw three big prospects, shortstop prospects, get called up as well. Mm-hmm. I got Culpepper in a few leagues. We'll see how that works out. As far as relievers go, there's been some, some openings and some changes, but the trade deadline didn't shake up too much in the closer market, I feel.
It definitely shook it up a little bit. Yeah, nothing crazy where you don't no new big all-star relievers on a new team or whatever, or at least all-star closers, but definitely some minor names to talk about. And yeah, I think we did a pretty good job of getting through every single team last week, so I felt pretty good about that. I've just been so busy on Sundays recently that I just haven't been able to put a bunch of fab. Not that I have much left anyway, but I'm also pretty out of it in the two leagues that I do fab in. So, oh well, just trying not to be embarrassing in my home league right now, where I'm in like sixth place, which would be my worst finish ever. Uh-huh. That's not good. But my team has just been just absolutely decimated by injuries. And I know everybody faces injuries, and sometimes it's really hard to get any sympathy from league mates when it comes to talking about, oh, my team is so injured. Every single one of my top 100 batters is on the injured list right now.
I mean, it is what it is. Maybe you need to add some more IL spots to that league.
I don't know if that would have saved me though. They're all just done. It's Juan. I had Juan Soto, Brent Rooker, Michael Garcia, Vinny Pasquantino, and Gleyber Torres. And maybe Gleyber was a bit of a reach in the top 100. I know second base was shallow, but all of those guys were on the IL, and I don't have Gleyber anymore because I dropped him while he was injured, and he was injured for a while. So all those guys did not hit. It's been a rough year for me. I also traded for Garrett Crochet, who now doesn't seem to be making it back in a starting role. I got one start from him after I traded for him, and it's been pretty disastrous season for me, but you can't win every year.
It's better than fantasy football. I know you're not big into fantasy football, but it's I feel fantasy football, sometimes you can't overcome injuries, especially the early round guys, but in baseball you can at least piece it together and have a decent, like, you can, I know there's no playoffs and it's a roto league, but like, if like you're, you know, if you get six, you can still piece it together and make the playoffs if you just grind on the waiver wire. So
that's how I feel I've been doing in the staff league. I was in last place for maybe the first 3 or 4 weeks, and I've just been grinding the rest of the way. I'm now I think half a game behind you, and we're facing each other this week. So that's big pretty matchup. Big if I beat you, I'm in the top five now, which it sets me up pretty good for the playoffs, but I don't expect to win anything. But in seventh right now, so at least I'll be in this top staff league for another year along with you.
That's the important one. Yeah, just don't get relegated. Yeah.
right All right, well, we are here to talk relievers as usual. We're going to run through the news and notes from the past week. Then we'll talk about some of the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. And then we're going to look at some American League storylines. We'll go through every single American League bullpen and discuss a pressing question or two about each one of them. But let's start it off with the news and notes, beginning with some transactions, as Brad Lord was activated from the 15-day IL after missing a month with side tightness. Zach Littell was designated for assignment in a corresponding move and subsequently signed a major league contract with the Diamondbacks. He pitched 4 2/3 innings of relief for Michael Soroka on Monday. But Brad Lord, back in that Nationals bullpen, he's been a very flexible reliever where he can open, he can throw multiple innings, he can be a setup guy. He's even gotten a save this year. So Brad Lord, sort of pretty integral to this evolving Nationals bullpen.
I don't know what his role is going to be now that they've added some pieces. They have new names to work with, new arms to work with there. But I'm sure, he'll be a long guy for them, or serviceable in some way or another, but not too exciting altogether.
Right. In Pittsburgh, they got their bullpen to full strength now as Evan Sisk was activated from the 15-day IL after missing over a month with elbow inflammation. Wilbur Dotel was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So Sisk gives the Pirates bullpen three lefties, Mason Montgomery, Gregory Soto, and Sisk, and that combines with a lot of the right-handers that they acquired at the deadline, Luke Weaver, Camilo Duvall, Kirby Yates, Lake Backer, and the guy who was already there in Johan Ramirez. So that's a pretty strong bullpen. It's at full strength today. We saw it go in full effect today for the Pirates as Paul Skenes lasted, I think, just four or five innings as another bad start for him. It's not looking great for Paul Skenes, but the Pirates are still chugging along.
I mean, they have the interesting thing with them is, yeah, I think Johan Ramirez finished the game, looked good, but they haven't, since the trade deadline, they have not had a save chance. So we still don't know. We're still waiting to see, you know, who is actually going to be closing out games for them, because it's been, they've been struggling since they made all those moves. So,
right.
They're kind of, I mean, they're rapidly falling out of the wild card.
They might be out of it. They're 4.5% chance to make the playoffs, according to FanGraphs.
Getting Kirby Yates for nothing, I guess. But yeah, it's, you know, Sisk gives them another lefty, and now you have Soto and Sisk, and hopefully that means maybe we'll see, you know, Mason Montgomery actually get a chance in the ninth inning. He deserves it. He's been unbelievable the past month, past month plus. So yeah, now if you're out of it, just let's see what Montgomery can do in the ninth. Let's go for it.
Please. I mean,
Luke Weaver has been fine. He's a good guy to have in the eighth inning, but you know, Montgomery is a difference maker.
Right. That's like the future closer type guy you're looking at there. I mean, Luke Weaver's great and all, but I think that even Weaver knows for himself that he's probably better suited for a setup role. He's been one of the best setup men in baseball in the past 3 years. The Pirates get him again next year. So maybe try to figure out the roles now so you don't have to go into spring training trying to determine who the closer is. Let's go to the Red Sox, who optioned Greg Weissert to the minors and selected the contract of Raymond Burgess in a corresponding move. They subsequently optioned Burgess to the minors to select the contract of Seth Martinez. And this isn't super fantasy relevant. I was just surprised that Weissert got sent down. He hasn't been spectacular this year, but his xFIP is in the threes. It's below four. And I think he's gotten seven holds for the club this year. So he's been a pretty reliable, at least middle relief, late relief option for them. And so with Weissert out, I guess the right-handed options in that bullpen start becoming more clear.
Yeah, I mean, I've been calling for Weissert to be sent down for a while. For at least Alec Gamboa has been, they brought up Burgos for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I mean, Gamboa's had come up a couple times and he's looked pretty good and gives him another lefty. But yeah, and now Seth Martinez, who's pitching right now, it's probably all temporary until I'm trying to think what the next move is. I don't know. I don't think any other pitcher is close to coming off the IL. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'd like to see Gamboa back up, but yeah, Weissert it's tough because at the beginning of the year, Weissert was kind of the, you know, third or fourth option in that bullpen, but they're so deep now at this point that there's really, I mean, you're not using him over anyone in that bullpen right now outside of Bayo, who has like a certain, he's got a specialty role being the long guy. So yeah, right. I don't think there's any need for Weissert in this bullpen.
All right, and lastly, amongst our transactions, we have a couple of veterans moving around. Craig Kimbrell signed a major league contract with the Royals, and I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up being the closer in September. And Paul Sewald was designated for assignment by the Diamondbacks. It was a swift fall for Sewald, who was the closer through the trade deadline, came out of the deadline, just giving up bombs left and right. He was removed from the closer role and now has been removed from the 40-man roster altogether. He should become a free agent, and I think Sewald should still be attractive to some teams, at least as a middle relief option. So any thoughts on Kimbrell and Sewald?
Kimbrell still looked like he had something left in the tank in Tampa. They had plenty of opportunity in Kansas City because there's really hard to trust anyone outside of Stephen Cruz at this point. So, and even Cruz gives up too many home runs. Speaking of giving up too many home runs, Paul Sewald, That was really his only issue. I mean, it's crazy. He lost the closer role with a 1.01 whip. Like, his whip was almost below one.
Yeah.
I think before that three home run outing, it probably was below one. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's the home runs are definitely an issue. And, but yeah, he wasn't throwing the ball poorly. He's definitely going to get claimed. I mean, a few teams could have interest there. And I don't think he makes it to any of the big contenders. So I'm thinking like a Seattle, St. Louis, something like that. Which, yeah, I mean, maybe Washington. I don't know if they would do that, but there's definitely a few teams who could use him right now. But yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see where he lands.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to be a closer wherever he goes. He can just be somebody yeah. that provides that veteran presence, similar to what Kirby Yates is doing in Pittsburgh. Now let's look at some injuries from the past week. Most of them are minor, but we have one significant one. We'll save that for closer to the end. Let's start with Sam Bachman, who was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm radial nerve inflammation. Taylor Saucedo was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. This Angels bullpen is really unspectacular right now. Bachman was one of the few guys that were clearly set up for high leverage situations. And with him out now, there's a clear trio of options that are at least somewhat trustworthy in that Angels bullpen.
Yeah. Trying to think if Fermin is trustworthy or not, but yeah, Fermin is definitely an interesting option behind Natera and Ben. I mean, Ben Joyce has looked awesome so far. Just stay healthy, man. Fastball looks really good. He finally threw a slider last night. But the fastball looks good. And Natera is just like, you know, on another world right now, the way he's throwing the ball. I mean, I really hope they don't mess that up. I'm sure that I don't know how the Angels, I mean, they just fired their whole pitching coaching staff today. Right. So we'll see what happens with Natera, but and with Bachman too. Yeah. Like and they just traded Zephyr John. I mean, I know they got a pretty good return for Zephyr John. I probably would have made that deal too, but like, they're building something really good in this bullpen, at least at the very least. So there's some hope for the Angels pitching down the road, especially if Joyce can stay healthy for them.
Right. Next, Ryan Thompson was placed on the 15-day IL with a strained lower back. Philip Abner was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Thompson has had the worst season of his career in 2026, pitching for the Diamondbacks, 4.43 ERA, 16% strikeout rate. He does have 7 holds, though, so he was a significant member of the high leverage situation in Arizona, but that's sort of evolved since then. There seems to be a clear group of guys that they're willing to trust in the late innings. And Thompson was sort of on the outside looking in by August.
Yeah, it's been, you know, behind Garcia, it's Morillo and Loaisiga and Ginkel and even Taylor Clark probably ahead of Thompson. So, yeah, they shouldn't miss him too much, but.
Right.
The Abner's a lefty, right? So at least Gap gives him another lefty in that bullpen, I guess.
Yeah, at least one, which should help Brandon Garcia hold on to that role, because that was the only knock we've had against him. It's not that we have anything against a southpaw closer, but when you're the only lefty in a bullpen, it starts to get a little bit funky when you're like, okay, well, we need a lefty to come in, but we don't have anybody to go because we got to save this guy for the ninth inning. So that should help Garcia hold on to that closer role. Let's go to Seattle, who placed Cole Wilcox on the 15-day IL with an oblique strain. Nick Davila was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and that's about the lowest impact fantasy move we'll talk about today. So let's go right to the White Sox, who placed Chris Murphy on the 15-day IL with a flexor strain. David Sandlin was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move and then subsequently optioned to the minors so that the White Sox could call up a pair of interesting pitching prospects who are expected to pitch out of the bullpen the rest of the way. We got Hagen Smith and Tanner McDougal. Smith was selected from the minors. He's baseball's number 51 prospect and the White Sox number 2 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. Hagen Smith was the 5th overall pick in 2024. He's a 22-year-old southpaw who at AAA had a 4.32 ERA, a 35% strikeout rate, but a 16% walk rate as he really struggles with his control. Smith has a 60-grade fastball and a 70-grade slider, according to FanGraphs. And that fastball. We got a glimpse of it in his debut. He also throws a cutter, but the fastball, 94 to 95 miles per hour, just 14 inches of IVB, a little bit of two-plane movement there, but 1.5 HAVA and 7 feet of extension. That's sort of what you expect from a guy that's sort of tall and lanky. I think a little bit like Garrett Crochet-like, but without the velocity. Very similar mix as well. And then Tanner McDougal is the White Sox number four prospect. He's a 23-year-old righty at High A and Triple A. He has a 3.44 ERA, a 1.15 WHIP, a 28% strikeout rate, and a 14% walk rate. 60-grade slider, 60-grade fastball from McDougal. What do you think of these two top pitching prospects that are likely to be rotation members in the future but are currently contributing to the White Sox bullpen?
Yeah, they both kind of have a reliever profiles, or there's reliever right. risk for both. I think McDougal could definitely be like a future closer type. And Smith from the left side can be like, yeah, basically what we saw from Chris Sale, Garrett Crochet as mm-hmm. relievers when they were in Chicago. See how he transitions to the rotation. But yeah, both have some command issues at the moment. That's typical for young pitching prospects. Obviously, that White Sox bullpen is still, it's the same situation where there's no set closer. There's really no set roles. So yeah, be interesting to see how they, especially Smith from the left side. Hudson's been pitching better lately. He's been pretty good. Newcomb's been pretty solid this year, but neither one has Hagen Smith type stuff. So will be interesting to see how aggressive they are using these guys. I don't think we've seen McDougal yet. I'm very interested to see how he looks when he gets a chance.
Yeah, me too. I think these guys are both very high upside guys. I think just the fact that they both have very inflated walk rates is clear indicators that they're probably due for bullpen roles in the future, especially Smith. He seems like the exact type of guy that you think of when you're like, all right, who's a top prospect pitcher that's going to end up in the bullpen. He's got a little bit of like Josh Hader vibes too. Just the fastball slider from the left side with low command. It seems like just the prototypical southpaw that ends up pitching in relief after sort of struggling as a starter. So I think they do have some potential here. It'll be exciting to see how these guys can establish themselves in this bullpen ahead of the playoffs, because they could be some legitimate weapons that could help out the rest of these guys here.
Yeah, I mean, again, like the at least gives them some bullpen depth and gives them like Smith's very different from Newcomb and Hudson mm-hmm. and stuff wise. So yeah, it gives them some options at least. And I'm glad that the White Sox are being aggressive and not just holding these guys back, but they're in it for the playoffs right now. So hopefully we see these guys stick around on the roster until the rest of the season.
Right. Going over to the Phillies, they placed Caleb Killian on the 15-day IL with an oblique strain and recalled Chase Sugar from the minors in a corresponding move. Pretty disappointing, as not only are oblique strains something that can keep players out for a pretty lengthy amount of time, I'd say probably 3 to 5 weeks for Caleb Killian, but he was just acquired at the deadline for a club that is really in need of right-handed relievers, especially in those middle relief situations after having lost Brad Keller for the rest of the season. So the Phillies will be heavily reliant on Jonathan Bolin and Orion Kerkering.
Mostly Bolin, I think, because Kerkering right. doesn't look right either. I mean, Kerkering might be hurt. So I don't know if they've said anything, but his velocity has been way down. It's been it's down. And you got destroyed the other night in his last outing. So, yeah, I mean, they probably needed to make a little bit more of an impact move at the deadline. I know they hope Killian would be the answer, but that's really a dart throw, especially how he's been all year. It's been a bit of a roller coaster with him. So
right, they got Raley.
Yeah, I mean they're the left side, they'll probably be okay. And Bolin looks great, but you're trusting he doesn't have much of a track record, so mm-hmm. we'll see. I mean, I'm a big Jonathan Bolin believer, no doubt, but yeah, it's still worries me. They brought up McFarland today.
Alex McFarland.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a guy that they're pitching him right now in a tie game, so in the seventh inning. So that could be a guy that they kind of fast track. They did it with Kerkering a few years ago when he made his debut. I mean, he debuted and he was like right into leverage situations for them. So Mm-hmm. Maybe McFarland follows a similar kind of track.
Yeah, I think because he had gotten promoted earlier this year, he sort of flew under my radar. But those are some impressive numbers at AA and AAA this year. McFarland has a 1.83 ERA and a 34% strikeout rate, and that comes with a 13% walk rate. But the strikeout minus walk rate is still north of 20%. So he seems pretty spectacular. Looking at his repertoire from that one inning that he did pitch, he throws 100 miles an hour. So yeah, we're onto something there. 1.8 HAVA too. So that's it's coming from a low angle. That's that's pretty exciting. All right, well,
he's fun.
Who cares about Killian?
He's an interesting guy to watch, and I'm hoping he sticks around this time as long as he keeps throwing well. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Alex McFarland. He could be quickly climbing up that Phillies bullpen ladder. Our most consequential injury from this past week was Devin Williams landing on the 15-day IL with a shoulder strain. Jonathan Pintaro was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And given where the Mets are at in their season, given how far out they are from the playoffs, I don't expect them to rush Williams back. Not saying that he's not going to come back this season, but this is not, if this ends up being something that's more than a minimum stay, it would not surprise me. But right now, with Williams out, the guy who got the first save opportunity and successfully converted it was Kodai Senga.
Yeah, I don't know, you've been the starting pitching guy. What have you been watching? Have you seen any of Senga this year?
Yeah, I mean, earlier in the year, it was exciting because he was throwing harder, so that's something that I would be looking for.
And he is now. Yeah. Right.
So he's up to 97 now. And in the spring, he was throwing like 96, 97, which was exciting. So he's north of 97 now, which is cool because he's the guy with the ghost fork and that's about it. So he always struggles with his command as well. That's always a big issue. We've seen a 15% walk rate this year as he just struggles to throw strikes with his arsenal. But if he's able to get that fastball in the zone to set up the splitter and or the forkball, whatever you want to call it, and in concert with that cutter, which gives him that secondary strike pitch, gives him an option that's better versus right-handed batters as well and can jam lefties, he's got the arsenal that should succeed out of the bullpen. It'll just be about how many strikes he can throw. And I think a bullpen role is much more suited for a guy that struggles with his mechanics and his command.
Yeah. And I mean, that pretty much is spot on from his outing last night, where we saw the fastball velo work for him. The ghost fork got his two whiffs. But then the command was shaky. But yeah, there's something there. I mean, there could be something there for him. I guess considering the other options in that bullpen, I guess that's a fun option compared to like Daniel Duarte or Nate Lavender. Jeffrey Yan would have been more fun, but yeah, that's we think we've seen enough. We've seen him to know that his command is way worse than Senga's. So
I think if I had to give a comp for Senga of a current closer, it's Emilio Pagan. I think they're very similar, where Pagan's not somebody who's always throwing a lot of strikes. He's got a decent fastball. Senga throws a little harder, but I think Pagan has better shape on the pitch. He also throws a splitter and a cutter. So they are pretty similar pitchers.
Yeah, I think I would probably say Pagan has a little bit better command, but I see that the repertoire is very, very similar. It's very similar arsenals.
Are you picking up Senga in the majority of standard leagues?
So they said the Williams injury, they said it's minor. They're not expecting it to be a serious thing, but yeah, like you said, Mets are out of it. There's really nothing going on. You know, they're not winning anytime. They're not going into the postseason. So is there a reason to rush him back?
Right.
Again, if he's healthy and he wants to return, they'll make it happen. But yeah, I think I play Senga 28, 29. I mean, there's still like, you know, I would probably rather take chances on a lot of the other bullpen situations right now. So, I don't know though. If he gets more than 2 weeks as the closer, I feel like I would be missing out. So it's one of those, you know, how you feel. If you're feeling, you know, I guess the frizzle, it's a frizzle, as Nick would say, like if you're feeling, you know, take chances and see what happens with him. But yeah, there's upside and downside to it. But yeah, I think again, deeper leagues where you're desperate for saves, yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's not a top 25 guy for me right now.
Okay. All right, we got a couple more injuries. Sean Anderson was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation. I should have grouped this one with the Sam Bachman injury. Sammy Peralta was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, Kervin Castro was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow neuritis. And in a corresponding move, Bradley Hanner was recalled from the minors by the Yankees. He's a 27-year-old righty who at AAA had a 2.10 ERA, a 1.17 whip, a 29% strikeout rate, and an 11% walk rate. And I thought it was a bit curious to see Jeff Passan tweeting about Hanner getting called up.
He's normally the guy who breaks the big news.
I need a notification about a 27-year-old reliever getting called up from the minors. Like, his numbers are good, but they're not like otherworldly. I guess he must have just gotten the break on it and he's going to tweet it. But I was like, why am I getting a notification about Bradley Hanner? He better be really good.
I don't know anything about him. Just trying to get some sort of information.
He considers
his sweeper his best pitch. So that's what I got for you. All right. But yeah,
I mean, he's low leverage anyway, but we'll talk more about the Yankees bullpen later.
Who knows? Very interesting situation. Right. So, yeah.
Well, we'll keep him in mind when we get to the Yankees on the AL storylines. Let's wrap up the news and notes with some news from the past week. Justin Martinez will be the first guy we talk about. He's recovering from Tommy John surgery, which he underwent in June of 2025. He is expected to make two more rehab appearances before being reinstated from the 68-day IL, which means Justin Martinez could return to the Diamondbacks bullpen as early as next week. In other Diamondbacks news, AJ Puck will remain shut down for the rest of the season. So a guy who was initially believed to be able to return ahead of Justin Martinez, he had the Tommy John surgery with the internal brace, and he had it a week before Martinez. So he was somebody who was, I don't know, pretty strongly believed to be able to return before Martinez. I mean, we thought he would be back in the first half, and he did not make it back at all.
They were all off season. They're like, he'll be back by June. And this is what happens. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Setback. So with Justin Martinez possibly returning next week, is that somebody that you're looking to stash where you can? And is he somebody that may immediately start challenging Brandon Garcia for that closer role in Arizona?
I would imagine so. What happened last year is he and Puck was the closer, then he got hurt, then Martinez was the closer, then he got hurt. So I think Martinez, and he's got the longer term contract there. I think Martinez, if healthy and throwing, is so far, it sounds good. You know, the rehab appearances sound, you know, promising, throwing 100 miles per hour again. So if Martinez is in that bullpen and healthy, I think they would prefer him to be the ninth inning guy. And then that allows Garcia to be their leverage lefty, moves, you know, Murillo and Ginkle and Loaiza down, which probably is best for everyone in that bullpen. So, yeah, I don't know. I know Garcia's been throwing well, but again, they're still using him as a leverage guy, not a closer. So I think a guy like Martinez comes back, that changes things.
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's some sort of platoon between Martinez and Garcia matchups. Just to ease Martinez into the role and not use him too often on back-to-back days. So
yeah,
I think it'll be pretty ideal for the Diamondbacks, all things considering. And lastly, Daniel Palencia began a rehab assignment last week. They said he was supposed to begin it on Wednesday. I haven't seen any news since then. But if he has been rehabbing, Palencia could return as early as next week. He's recovering from elbow inflammation, which has held him out of action for the past 2 months.
Yeah, it sounds like, I think the plan, the hope was to have him back I guess he did make an appearance. He struggled on Tuesday, as today. Allowed 4 runs today, 2 outs. But, you know, as long as he's healthy, as long as he feels good and the stuff's good. We saw Jacob Webb get another save tonight, and he's just been so good. It's like, Webb's a guy who, I don't know if they turn over the closer role just right back to Palencia when he returns. And last year, kind of a similar situation. I know it was different bullpen pieces, but when Valencia came back, he wasn't the close. I mean, they had Kittredge there, and who am I thinking? Who's the other guy they had?
I remember what you're talking about.
Kittredge. Yeah, but like, I mean, in the postseason, Palencia wasn't really the closer there. So I don't know. Again, and if he's struggling in a rehab outings, then and Webb just keeps dealing, and he's racking up saves for the Cubs. All of a sudden, could be a tough situation there. But I know I think Cubs reporters and insiders have been like, no matter what, Palencia's getting the job back when he returns. So
they had Keller last year.
Keller, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. That's who it was. Yeah. So like they had guys there, and they have Webb and Zephyr John now. So we'll see.
We will. Very
interesting.
All right. Well, that will do it for our news and notes. Next, we'll move into our 3 up, 3 down section. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We are entering into our 3 up, 3 down section where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. Let's start with our risers, beginning with Brian Baker, who has emerged as one of the best closers in baseball this year. And he just keeps chugging along, 1.55 ERA, 29% strikeout rate. And he's now leads the majors with 34 saves on the season.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried the past 2 weeks with him because the velocity had just like taken a dip down to 95 miles per hour. And, he's even down 95, he's still throwing well. He's still, still really good shape on his fastball. He's still getting, I think since the All-Star break, he still has like a 27-28% strikeout rate. So he's still missing bats. Changeup still good. It's, it wasn't even just the velocity for me too, though. Like there's, look at some of these charts from his games, and he's leaving like, a lot of middle changeups, and just there's the locations haven't been as tight either. But the Seattle series, the last series that the Rays played in, velocity started to creep back up to at least normal, not great, but normal for him. And it's just he's on a roll right now. It's hard to, say that he's just going to – the wheels are going to fall off because we haven't seen any signs of it yet. So just keep rolling with him. He might not have the same upside as, some of the other guys in front of him, but he's, in a very good situation with the Rays, the way that they play games and the way that they win games. It's always a close game. So, no concerns with Baker as long as the velocity doesn't just completely fall off a cliff with his, shape and the IV beast, the inverted vertical break on his fastball still in the 20 range when he's down to 94, 95. So this, he's got that going for him.
All right. Our next riser is Emilio Pagan, who returned from the IL, reclaimed his closer role, and has locked back in. Remember, we were really concerned about him earlier in the season before the injury as his control was bad. And we were also had always been concerned about Pagan's home run issues pitching in Great American Ballpark. That really has not been an issue since returning. He's been getting a bunch of saves. I can pull up his numbers since the IL stint, but what has you moving Pagan up your ranks?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff's been getting slowly, like, it's been trickling up in the right direction. It's been trending the right way for him to the point now where I like the fastball's in, like, the upper 95, 96 range for him more often than not. Over the past month, he has an ERA of 1.67 whip, 35.3% K minus walk rate. And that's because he's got zero walks. It's really a 35.3% strikeout rate and no walks. Wow. But I mean, damn, we'll take that from him. Because especially the home run issues are going to be a thing for him. We get it. But just don't be walking guys and then giving up the home runs,
Right. Keep those,
keep those home runs to being solo shots if you have to. So I mean, the stuff just looks better for him, and again, he's still in Cincinnati. There's no competition behind him, and the Reds might not be great, but they're not like they're gonna still win games. They're not gonna they're not like the Rockies or some bottom feeder here, so they'll still give him plenty of save chances the rest of the way.
Our last riser is Pete Fairbanks, who was really frustrating earlier in the year because he was really underperforming his expected metrics. His ERA was super inflated. He was giving up a ton of home runs and he wasn't getting a lot of save opportunities, but he's been much more reliable recently. We've seen him get four saves since right before the trade deadline. I think he got another one today. So that gives him five saves in the past 2 weeks, and he hasn't allowed a run during that time as well. Yeah. So Pete Fairbanks looking a lot more like the Pete Fairbanks we expected him to be, especially when he came back with better stuff this season.
Seven straight scoreless now for him with a 10 to 2 strikeout to walk ratio over that span. Just one hit allowed. So, I mean, yeah, he's rolling right now. The fastball looks great. It's the best fastball we've seen from him in a couple of years, probably. That being said, the one caveat, I don't know about the slider and cutter are still kind of weird for I don't know. I don't know if he necessarily needs them to be great or what they used to be, especially that slider. Mm-hmm. But the fastball at least is working for him right now, and we'll start there and figure it out moving forward. But yeah, he looks good right now, and yeah, they've been sticking with him even when his ERA was in the sevens. You know, they've stuck with him. So there we go.
All right. As those guys rise up the ranks, others need to fall to accommodate them. So let's look at our fallers. Aroldis Chapman is our first one. His stuff has been diminished this year, especially compared to last year's historic campaign. And while that hasn't hurt him thus far, I think Rick might be a little bit concerned that that might not be the case the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really to get too upset about with him. The stuff is not trending the right way, though, especially when it comes to his fastballs, the four-seam sinker. And that's, you know, that's going to happen. But at some point, he's 38? Like, you know, he's not going to be throwing 100 miles per hour forever. Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, though, I think he can reach back and get to 100 when absolutely needed. I would have thought that would have been the case the other night, but he was, you know, 96.7 or something. It's just, you know, I think we might need to see him throw some, start working in the splitter and slider a little bit more often, which could help him keep hitters off balance, but at the same time might inflate his walk rate again. Now we're starting to look at like an older version of Aroldis Chapman potentially, and gets a little bit dicey. So I still think, I mean, he's fine at this point. You're rostering him, you're going to keep rostering him. But there's, you know, probably 10 other relievers or closers I would prefer over him at this point.
Or at least 9. You've got him ranked 10th.
I got him 10th. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
All right. Next, we've got Edwin Diaz, who returned from the IL and just immediately started getting the nickname Ed Luz Diaz, which, you know, one of my favorites, especially if he's going to pitch for the Dodgers. But it has not been pretty since he returned. He's allowed a run in all but 2 of his 7 outings thus far. That's a 9 ERA in those 7 outings. He's walked 3 batters while striking out just 6 across 5 innings. And just, he's also given up a pair of home runs. So not looking like the dominant Edwin Diaz we saw prior to the injury. Actually, he was bad prior to the injury as well, back in his heyday. And, you know, I can't complain because he's on the Dodgers and I roster Tanner Scott in so many leagues. So I would rather him not do super well. But regardless, I mean, there's plenty of fantasy managers relying on him, and Dodgers fans and the Dodgers in general are relying on Edwin Diaz. He did bounce back with the save on Monday, but is that enough to change your tune on Diaz?
And they're sticking with him. And yeah, the save last night, definitely better. I mean, the stuff looks better the last 2 outings for sure. The fastball is where it should be or where we want it to be. The slider's fine. It's just the locations haven't been great. The locations were better yesterday, at least with the slider. Left a couple fastballs over the middle of the plate. Still got, you know, he gave up a pretty long fly out, and then the ground ball to end the game was 104 miles per hour. So he's giving up hard contact still, even in this, and it's against the bottom of the Royals lineup. So it's like, you know, I guess we'll take it. It's a small win. We'll take any win at this point, but still concerned. It doesn't do anything to alleviate concerns for Diaz. I think he'll ultimately be fine. I don't think this is like the end of Edwin Diaz being good, but I mean, that being said, Tanner Scott is struggling at the same time as Diaz, which definitely hurts. And I think the quote from Roberts was like, you know, no one else, paraphrasing, like no one else is pitching well. No one else is in the bullpen's pitching well right now. So we're going to keep rolling with Diaz. So I guess that's going to be the case. So he's at least going to still be in that closer role for the foreseeable future. I do have my doubts. And if Tanner Scott can get back on track before Diaz, you got to wonder if they would, they should at least be open to making that switch. But yeah, we'll see.
At least right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the stuff's there for Diaz. I think he'll figure it out, but just the locations, which is makes sense. He's been out for so long. I mean, he's going to be a little rusty. So, but yeah, we'll see how it goes with him. Definitely can't put him in the top five anymore, and top 10's even questionable.
Right. All right. Our final faller is Raisel Iglesias, who came out of the trade deadline and immediately had a pair of two earned run outings. He's not been spectacular. That's three straight outings without a save. And he was due for a regression this year. I mean, he had an ERA under two for most of the year. It's now climbed up to close to three. And with Robert Suarez on the IL, I feel like his role is pretty safe. But man, would I love to see Dylan Lee get some save opportunities for the Braves.
Didi Fuentes has been unbelievable for them. I mean, he got a save for them last week. Again, the Braves are pretty aggressive with their pitching. Either whether it's promotions or just usage. And it wouldn't shock me if they were, I mean, Fuentes has clearly been the best, or Lee's probably been the best reliever there, but Fuentes has been the best righty of the group. And if they really want to protect Lee as a lefty setup guy, that's fine. Cause Fuentes can easily take the ninth. He's been the better pitcher than Iglesias for the past 2 months. It's not even close. So I could see that happening. Iglesias being a veteran, they probably will keep trying. And he threw tonight, not a safe chance. They were up four runs, and he had a clean inning for them. So that's, I think, back-to-back clean outings for Iglesias. So maybe moving back in the right track. But, again, especially if Robert Suarez comes back, because his news on him has not been great. But if Suarez is able to come back and be healthy, then, yeah, I think – you know, Iglesias would be on kind of thin ice there with any sort of issues. They could easily remove him and be fine, because either Fuentes or Suarez, or if they wanted to go the lefty route, they have Lee. I mean, Dylan Dodd's another left. They have good lefties there, so Lee technically could be the closer. But yeah, there's just other options there that are better than Iglesias at this point. So I guess it's kind of a wait and see how things work themselves out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what this bullpen looks like in the playoffs, because they have some not only underrated arms, but guys that I think have been underutilized. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Iglesias has one bad outing in the playoffs, how quickly do they pivot to somebody else that has been dominating? And, you know, this is an opportunity for somebody like Didier Fuentes to emerge as the closer of the future. And even with Robert Suarez signed for 2027. So definitely worth keeping an eye on. That will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, our risers were Brian Baker, Emilio Pagan, and Pete Fairbanks. And our fallers were Aroldis Chapman, Edwin Diaz, and Raisel Iglesias. Next, we'll talk about some AL storylines. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relief pitchers. We're going to go through every single American League team and discuss some pressing questions about each bullpen to see, you know, what are the emerging storylines in each of these bullpens for the season's final 2 months. We're sort of at the a month and a half point right now. It's August 11th as we're recording this. So not much time left in the season. So it'll be interesting to see how these questions are answered, but we'll go in alphabetical order based off of city name. We'll start with the A's, who don't have a city name. They are just the Athletics, though. We do know they play in Sacramento. I have been there. I can confirm that. But the A's right now are allowing Hogan Harris to emerge. So I think the first question right now is Hogan Harris or Elvis Alvarado the rest of the season. I think I prefer Elvis Alvarado over like a longer term span, just considering the stuff and the ability from both of them, but the usage suggests that Harris is the guy to trust.
Yeah, I mean, Harris has five saves since the All-Star break. So he's got 11 on the year, and five have come since the All-Star break. But yeah, I mean, it's really not, the ratios are not great. I mean, he's giving up walks, earned runs. It hasn't been smooth sailing. It hasn't been pretty, but they're still trusting him. And at least I'll give the A's credit for like sticking with someone, I guess, finally. Because when Jack Perkins had like one bad closing outing, they like moved on from that.
You're a starter again.
And then Alvarado had like one bad save situation. They moved on from him. And now at least I guess they're giving Harris this leash here to be the closer. I mean, I still, if Alvarado is, you know, like what he is, like 100%, if he's healthy, then Alvarado I would like him over Harris. I think there's more strikeout stuff, and honestly, I would never thought I would say this, but the walks are better, like the command's better from Alvarado than from Logan Harris. So
not many guys that's the case.
They seem to prefer Harris for whatever reason. I still think we could see, I would not be surprised, especially matchup wise, since there's a lefty and righty in that duo, would not be surprised to see Alvarado get the ninth every now and then with Harris coming in earlier in the game. So but yeah, I think at least they have those two. Those are the two guys to care about, I guess. And I don't know if there's anything. I don't think there's anything behind them in that bullpen.
Right. That's the other question I had: is anybody going to emerge beyond those two for 2027? It's looking pretty bleak right now. The A's are going to have to really address the bullpen in the offseason, and they did this past offseason. They got Leiter, they got Barlow, they got I can't remember all of them. They got a bunch of veterans that, you know, didn't end up really working out too well. And I just don't know if they have any prospects that are going to emerge. I think Seth Johnson and Luis.
They brought in Seth Johnson. Yeah. I think that's the one guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's pretty bleak outside of that.
So probably nobody emerging out of here. Definitely worth keeping an eye on Seth Johnson, but that's the A's bullpen right now. Now we'll move over to the Orioles bullpen. And currently they've got what appears to be a co-closer situation. Yennier Cano and Andrew Kittredge have sort of been flip-flopping roles recently. And I think Rico Garcia is sort of mixing in as well in high leverage situations. So among those three, I mean, who do you have rest of the season? I for one prefer Cano over the rest, but if none of them are going to be used in a traditional role and they're all going to mix around the seventh, eighth, and ninth, none of them are worth rostering in fantasy.
I had Garcia last week. Now I'm on Cano, and Cano just struggled in his. Cano just came into the eighth, gave up a hit and a walk to start the inning. Did get out of it. He got out of the inning, but I don't know. Yeah, they had Rico Garcia warming up. So is Garcia going to get the ninth tonight after he looked terrible yesterday? I mean, that would be crazy. But I don't know. This bullpen has been very, very hard to predict when Helsley is not been healthy. This is kind of more of an important question because, I know the next part is will Helsley or Bautista return? And it looks more and more like they won't. And if they do, it's like very late in September for either one of them. So, we might have at least a month of, you know, save opportunities for Cano, Kittredge, or Garcia. And I guess, I still think Cano, even though he got the eighth again tonight, they love Andrew Kittredge. I'm not sure exactly why. And it would be interesting to see who gets the ninth here. Maybe it ends up being Kittredge after all, which, if that's the case, I'm not as excited because it's just low upside. But yeah, Garcia did not look good last night. The velocity was down. Stuff in general has just been down for him. I'm not sure. He might be trying to pitch through something at this point. But like, you know, when you see his IVB on his fastball has just been like on a steep decline from April, not just the velocity, but all of it. So it's something doesn't seem right with him.
All right, let's move over to the Red Sox. And I think we know how the eighth and ninth innings are going to pan out. It's been Garrett Whitlock in the eighth and Aroldis Chapman in the ninth for most of the season. But it's hard to determine how the rest of that bullpen shakes out. What is the pecking order in front of Garrett Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman?
I know, because, you know, those two guys are locked in the eighth and ninth. As long as Chapman is not, you know, as long as Chapman's not, you know, blowing multiple saves in a row, he should be safe for the ninth. Whitlock's been fine. Slayton kind of was the seventh inning guy, but I feel like Tyron Guerrero's moved into that. I think Guerrero's like the third guy in this pecking order at this point, and he deserves it. I mean, he's been just lights out for them past couple of months, throwing 101, no complaints there. And Eric, like, but then it's like, where do you put Eric Miller, Slayton still? And Miller, I mean, they traded Marcelo Mayer for Miller to he opened the other day. It's like, all right, we're
that's crazy.
Trading our former top prospect for an opener.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, Miller's going to have important outs for them in the bullpen as well. But I do think they'll, you know, maybe they feel like him opening for Bayo makes sense in some way. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. But I do think Guerrero is the third guy there. And then after that, it is kind of wide open between Slayton, Miller, even Giovanni Moran deserves some love too. He's been great.
Yeah. It is a surprisingly deep bullpen for a Red Sox team that for a bullpen that doesn't have the names that we saw at the beginning of the season. The emergence of Guerrero and Moran and the acquisition of Miller have definitely shaken things up, but definitely makes this Red Sox bullpen a lot stronger moving forward. Let's go to the White Sox, from the Red Sox to the White Sox. And I think the questions are all going to revolve around Grant Taylor and his usage. Is he going to be a traditional closer ever, or is it just a committee the rest of the year? And that'll be interesting to watch in the playoffs. But for the regular season, do you think Grant Taylor ever emerges as that traditional closer like he deserves to be, like the White Sox have hinted at doing, especially with the trade of Sir Anthony Dominguez? Or is it just going to be him, Sean Newcomb, and Brian Hudson being used interchangeably?
Yeah, I mean, they used Taylor in the ninth today, so I think it's trending that way. I don't know if I would be confident enough to say he's going to get 50% of the saves, but I think it's, you know, somewhere between 40 and 50% of the saves for Taylor would be my guess.
They used Taylor in the ninth because he pitched the eighth.
He came into bailout. Bailout Hudson in the eighth, but I think they were probably going to go to him in the ninth anyway.
I hope so.
He has not looked as good as he. It's been like he's been very normal. He's been very average the past month or so. You know, his velocity's taken a big hit. Even still, though, that being said, I mean, I'd still take him over pretty much anyone else in this bullpen. Jordan Hicks he's kind of taken a little bit of a step back lately, but I still think there's something there with Hicks as long as he's throwing 101. So yeah, there's other options here, but it would be nice to get some sort of just lock in on Taylor. Let's see how that goes. But they like using him in multiple innings, but I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to see just Taylor get the ninth inning consistently. Not this year, at least.
Yeah, well, hopefully they figure something out. I'll be curious to see how that works out in the playoffs, where you really just want to lock those games down. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being just the traditional guy in the ninth inning. But, you know, it's been hard to predict what the White Sox are going to do with their bullpen. Going back to the Orioles, looks like Andrew Kittredge is in for the ninth inning save. All right, let's go over to the Guardians. My question surrounds the quote-unquote youngsters. I say quote-unquote because one of the youngsters I have in there is Eric Sabrowski, who's about to be 29 and is surprisingly older than Hunter Gaddis. But will youngsters Eric Sabrowski, Franco Aleman, Craig Yoho, and Daniel Espino become trustworthy options ahead of the postseason? Because I know the Guardians are going to be relying heavily on Cade Smith and Hunter Gaddis and Colin Holderman and even Tim Herron if they do end up making the playoffs, which is looking exceedingly unlikely. They're at a 27% chance, according to Fangraphs, to make the playoffs. But I think the rest of that bullpen, the rest of those guys that I just mentioned, could really make this bullpen lights out in the playoffs if all those guys emerge as trustworthy options: Sabrowski, Aleman, Yoho, and Espino.
What if none of them do?
Right.
That's like gotta, That's kind of how it's trending right now. Is I don't know if we can trust any of those four. Sobrowski just, I mean, the command just fell. It's just not there anymore for him. It's such a shame how good he looked, you know, in April, man. There's no command. It's gone. Ailman's, Ailman's stuff has been, it was good. It was, there's a point where it was good. It's been down for a while now. Yoho has been having big issues. I don't know if he can get away with throwing his changeup 90% of the time. Espino, we haven't seen too much of. Again, that's another wild card. So, yeah, it's a team that we used to think that, like, this bullpen is really deep. They've had deep bullpens in the past. It will be interesting to see what they do, because especially in the postseason, we know how they like to go to the bullpen in, like, the fifth inning,
right,
and then go from there. I don't know if they can. I don't know if they'll be able to do that this year. You know, especially Gattis has been super untrustworthy. Smith's kind of, I don't know. Kate Smith's throwing 100 miles per hour all of a sudden, but the command is not good. It's like I think I just go throw 97 with good command. We're fine there.
Right. Stay healthy, my guy.
Yeah. So I don't know. And then Holderman's been a rock, but like, there's a lot of question marks with the guys in between Smith and, or the guys before Cade Smith at this point. So,
right.
And they need someone those guys, of this, right. They need someone there.
You need those guys to step up. Our next sort of storyline there is just the extreme usage of both Cade Smith and Hunter Gattis over the past 3 years and this year alone, as since 2024, Cade Smith and Hunter Gattis are second and third respectively in appearances in baseball, trailing only Tyler Rogers, which, you know, that's like the Gumby rubber arm guy who just can go out and throw every single day because he throws 80 miles an hour. But you talking about Cade Smith throwing 100 miles per hour. Yeah. So I think you're going to need guys to emerge for not only to take the pressure off these guys from throwing every single day in the playoffs or down the stretch, but also because we're likely to see those guys struggle the rest of the way as they've been used so heavily over the past 3 years.
Yeah. One of those guys, especially like the youngster group of Alleman and Yoho and Espino, one of those dudes needs to step up, hopefully. And then you get Sobrowski to at least get some of his command back by the end of the year. Then I'd feel a little bit bad. I'd feel better about this bullpen, but yeah, they're not there yet. They need some help here.
All right, let's go over to the Tigers, and I'm curious how close Kenley Jansen gets to 500 saves. I mean, he's not catching Trevor Hoffman or Mariano Rivera likely in his career, but he is still getting opportunities. He's still not been terrible. 3.82 ERA this year. He's still striking out some guys. 29%. He does record saves as well. He recorded his 14th save today to give him 490 saves. How likely do you think it is that Jansen gets to 500 before the end of the year?
He's at 490, you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, he's not going to get 10 more the rest of the way.
No.
I mean, he could, but he could.
It's unlikely. Yeah, less than 50%, you'd say?
Yeah. Like 35%. So that gives him, I mean, he'll be back next year. Maybe just for a month. I don't know. But like, yeah,
just to get to 500.
You know, he wants to get to 500 at this point. I mean, right. I would. I mean, yeah, like that close. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, the Tigers go on a little run here. Anything can happen. So 10 saves. I mean, 10 saves isn't out of the question.
No, but he's only got 14 for the whole year.
I know. I know. And he was only on the IL for like, it was only like 20 days, right? So it wasn't like he missed that much time.
No. And there is no competition though. And I mean, that's sort of the concern about this bullpen. Like, do they have enough guys to sort of hold the leads to get not only Kenley Jansen those save opportunities, but also to get the Tigers to the playoffs?
Yeah. And I mean, he got the save tonight and he was not good in that save opportunity, but it's not like he's going to lose the job.
Right.
Because of this outing, or I mean, there would have to be a lot that would have to happen for him to probably give that. I don't even know who. I mean, you can't trust Kyle Finnegan at this point, so I'm not really sure who they'd even turn to. But yeah, Jansen does seem pretty locked into that role. So Yeah, I would say four. I'll go to 40% for him to get to 100 saves or 500 saves.
Yeah.
We'll get a better chance.
And how do you feel about the rest of that bullpen, though? I have zero confidence in the rest of that bullpen. It doesn't feel like it's going to make it to the bullpen, or it's going to make it to the playoffs just because this bullpen's not going to be able to hold the leads.
I know. That's the thing, because they're, you know, even when they traded Skubal and Mize, it's like, all right, well, they're still like the rest of the team's intact. And like you got Job coming back and they could piece things together here. It wouldn't surprise me if they did sneak into the postseason somehow, but the bullpen is the one issue for me. I think rotation and lineup is good enough to give him a chance, but Kyle Finnegan just has not been, he's been worse this year than any of the years when he was in Washington that we were really down on him. He's even taken a step further back from that. I don't know what's going on there, but
he's doing his classic thing. 3.38 ERA. Get it done.
I'm right. It doesn't make sense. And then, Drew Anderson was kind of an interesting bullpen piece, but they moved him into the rotation. And now
they got a different Drew now.
Drew Summers is pretty interesting. From the left side, that bullpen's got some options, but the right side's what's lacking. Gilbert Diaz kind of looks interesting as a reliever. I don't know. We'll check back in on that in a couple of weeks because it hasn't been small sample. But I don't know. That could make or break that Tigers team, though, is how these bullpen pieces, Summers, Diaz, and De Jesus, how those guys kind of all come together and perform for them.
All right, let's move over to the Astros bullpen. They don't really have any pressing questions, but Brian Abreu has seemed to have turned his season around, which is going to be really great for him as he heads to free agency and could be a guy who might wind up being a closer somewhere. It gives me a little bit of Phil Maton vibes, though, where it's like, oh, I could see him closing somewhere, and then he just ends up being a setup guy on a great team. So that's not really guaranteed, but with him turning around, the rest of the bullpen is doing exactly what we expect. So got to have more confidence in this bullpen. But do you think Abreu will continue to trend towards the right way, and do you think he can get back to being one of the top setup men in baseball?
The trend's definitely, it's still not ideal with him, where I feel like there's one or two games where he looks kind of like himself and then reverts back the next one. So it's not like full, I don't think he's fully back, but at least we're seeing signs of him, his 2025-2024 self starting to come back. And it's definitely helpful for, the Astros are trusting him in the eighth inning again. So they have their Abreu to Hader, bridge is back and working for them. So definitely helps out the Astros. Then, like you said, helps him out. It's definitely gives him something to, to sell himself on this offseason when he's a free agent. So now that being said, if they get into the postseason, like, is it keep trending that way, or does it, we'll have to monitor it and see how things go. But I do like what we're seeing from Abreu. I've finally starting to have some belief in him myself. I moved him into the top 30 for holds this week. But it's been a long season. It's like crazy how it's kind of just steadily gotten a little bit better, and now he seems like he's close to being, say, like 80% Brian Abreu of old at this point.
All right, well, they're gonna need him to be pretty close to 100% because they do not have many reliable right-handed relievers in that bullpen, and the Astros are looking like they are headed for the playoffs for another year as the rest of that AL West is pretty disastrous. Let's go to the Royals, which has been a bullpen we've talked about a lot recently. Right now, looks like Steven Cruz is emerging as the closer, but Nate Pearson, of course, got a save this past week. And I think even more so than the question about Steven Cruz being the potential closer of the future, will manager Matt Quatraro ever figure out how to manage this bullpen, or how to manage a bullpen in general?
I don't know. Yeah. Again, I don't know what is going on in this bullpen or what the roles are supposed to be or what they, why. Yeah. I mean, it's just flipping a coin maybe. But Cruz has definitely been the most consistent option for them. And I know The home runs are still an issue for him. But they're all the other options in that bullpen just don't line up with him, his stuff, and just the way he's been pitching this year. So, especially now that Daniel Lynch is not in the bullpen anymore, which is just like another hilarious thing.
Oh, he's just full time in the rotation now. I thought he was just opening.
No, he's in the rotation.
Who is running this organization?
I don't know. Terrible. This guy had an 8% strikeout rate for like the past 2-3 months as a reliever. Gosh. And they're like, yeah, this is going to work out in the rotation.
Yeah.
It's screwed. I mean, Pearson's interesting. It was definitely when they made the move to bring him in. And then they brought in Kimbrel, too. So I'm sure we'll see Kimbrel, like you said, we'll see Kimbrel getting saves in September, I'm sure.
What's the likelihood he gets to 500 saves?
Do you know what?
He's at 440.
Right, oh, zero.
Come on. Kimbrel, they don't even have 60 games left.
I mean, there's no. This has got to be either his last year or, I mean, it's got to be close to the end of the line for him.
Hey, man, if I keep getting major league contract from big league,
sure, I'm going to stick around. And, yeah, I mean, there's still something in the tank there. I don't know if it's anything. There's something that's better than a lot of other relievers in baseball right now. So, yeah, I mean, is Cruz the closer of the future? As of now, yes, because there's not really much to – really not much else there unless it's I'm thinking of a starter turning to reliever, but nothing really rings a bell there. So yeah, I'd say he probably is, and it's not the worst thing. I mean, Jonathan Boland should be the closer of the future, but they messed that up. So I think Cruz is solid option for them. I mean, they could always, I mean, we'll see. They've had weird off seasons recently where maybe they'll spend some money on a closer. Maybe they'll bring back Carlos Estevez, but yeah, we'll see.
Right, I forgot that he's still around, but he's going to be a free agent after this year.
I believe he has a team option that I can't imagine
gets. Come on, up, but... bro, they're definitely going to pick that up. They love Carlos Estevez.
It's a club option for $13 million. There's no way.
But even the Royals, all they've done is do things that make me upset. So I would not be surprised if
They're not going to pick that up, but then they're going to give him like a 2-year, like $12 million total to come back. Nice. They'll give him something to come back. Yeah.
Got to bring him back. That's the closer of the future, Carlos Estevez. All right, let's move over to the Angels, another sort of beleaguered bullpen, but they're trending in the right direction. I sort of am glad that, you know, John Mozeliak is at least trying to do some stuff with this ball club. Perry Manassian sort of ran it into the ground a little bit, and Artie Moreno has been running it into the ground for decades. So right now, Ben Joyce is back, and do you think he has enough to establish himself as a 2027 target? Because this was a guy, I think, heading into 2025 that we were targeting as, oh, this is an under-the-radar guy who doesn't necessarily have the closer role right now, but out of nowhere, he could get it. He is one of the hardest throwers in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, he looks great right now. It's been 3 games. I just need this to stay. Just have him, you know, do this for the next month and a half or whatever, you know, can keep him healthy. If he gets a normal off season, and heading into next year, even with Sammy Nasera, might have more of a competition there. But either way, they're building something. They're definitely building towards something here with Natera, Joyce, Fermin, Bachman when he's healthy too. There were glimpses of him being a stud for them too. So they have the pieces there, even moving on from Zephyr John, to have a really good bullpen for next season. But there are health concerns with all of them and command concerns with all of them. Yeah, stuff wise, at least it's fun to see them building something, you know, with just elite stuff in those 4 guys.
So do you think it's like a platoon the rest of the way with Ben Joyce and Sammy Natera? Because both of those guys are looking pretty strong right now. They got that righty lefty thing going on as well.
Yeah, they've been using Joyce in the 7th and 8th innings so far. I would be shocked if he doesn't end up with a save chance at some point this year if he stays healthy. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, the way Natera is pitching right now, it's hard. Like, how do you just, like, move? I don't know. It'd be hard to move on from him just because Joyce is throwing well, and it's not like it's his job. It never really was Joyce's job. Like, it's not like he's, like, you know, earned it or anything. So I feel like Joyce would probably figure. I'd rather him. I know they used Fermin the other day when Natera was off. Mm-hmm. I'd rather Joyce than Fermin. And I like Jose Fermin. He's got good stuff and just a little bit more volatile with his command. But I think Natera probably gets 50% of the saves, Joyce 30%, and maybe Fermin, someone else gets another little bit, if I were to guess. Yep. Yeah.
All right. That sounds about how I would have it as well. Let's go to the Twins, where their usage has not been what I hoped since the trade deadline. They acquired Jeff Hoffman. I thought he would immediately be installed as the closer. He's definitely the highest upside reliever in this Twins bullpen, but he's not been used as such. He's been used in that high leverage fireman role, which I think Hoffman is best suited for. But in this Twins bullpen, I mean, I guess they could make it work. Yoandrés Gómez has been pretty reliable, though he did blow a save on Sunday. He didn't blow the save. He took a loss pitching in a tie ball game. But do you think it's just Gomez's job to lose right now, that he's secured that role so much, cemented himself in that ninth inning well enough that Hoffman is not going to be able to just knock him off, that Gomez is going to have to actively lose that role before Hoffman gets a chance?
That's what it seems like. That seems to be how they're playing it. And I guess that's fair, but I at the same time, I feel like it wouldn't take a lot for Gomez to lose the job and for Hoffman to sneak into that role. This could be one of those situations where the front office kind of wants Hoffman in the closer role, and the manager wants to stick with his guy. That, I mean, you know, Gomez hasn't really done anything to lose the role. He hasn't been great, especially recently. But once Hoffman did come over, I mean, I've seen an uptick in Gomez's stuff, and velocity's gone up since Hoffman came over. So I wonder if that was, like, you know, a little bit of a, you know, kick in the pants to get him going again. Cause yeah, right. June and July were very mediocre for Yoandrés Gómez. I think he had like an 11%, 12% strikeout rate. It was bad. It was, you know, stuff wasn't there. He wasn't missing bats. He's still getting lucky, and, you know, for the most part. But yeah, I mean, end of the day, Hoffman is the best option for them. But yeah, I guess if the manager thinks, you know, don't fix it if it's not broken, and Gomez really isn't broken yet. So
right,
they'll continue to roll with him, and they're keeping Andrew Morris in the eighth inning too, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So it seems like Hoffman is just, like, right back into the same situation he was in Toronto, as, like, the seventh inning guy, high leverage guy, what may you. So yeah,
right, that's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. But it's got to be frustrating for him too. It's like thinking you probably you're getting into a better situation.
Yeah,
you're
free.
Nope. Yeah, now you're at least, it's not Louis Varland in the ninth, it's Yoandrés Gómez. So there's a chance there for Hoffman.
It is not insurmountable for Jeff Hoffman. Now we'll go to the Yankees bullpen. And the question here is, will they regret not only not adding anybody at the trade deadline, but selling at the trade deadline, trading away guys like Camilo Doval and Jake Bird, and they dealt somebody else that I can't remember right now.
Bird, Doval, Yovani Cruz.
Right.
Yeah. So another guy who wasn't on the 40 man. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think they'll regret not adding anybody at the deadline and instead selling at the deadline? Because this bullpen is not very strong. It really does not look like a playoff caliber bullpen.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think they will. I know, I'm guessing the plan is for starters to move into the bullpen or for some help from AAA, but that's just, I mean, for a team like the Yankees, that's just like, I just can't believe they didn't add a reliever, or let alone trading away relievers. And I know it's not guys who are gonna, you know, you weren't counting on any of those guys in the postseason probably, but just having that depth, you know, missing that depth now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Paul Blackburn is now forced into, like, you know, high leverage situations, which that shouldn't be the case for a team that's going to make the postseason. You know, that's, I don't know, that they feel to me like a very easy out right now. If the playoffs were to start tomorrow, and they're in a 3-4-5 three or five game series with that bullpen, it's just you're just relying a lot on Bednar to give you a lot of innings, and then Cruz to not walk a bunch of guys, and you know, Hedrick's been good, but there's cracks there too. So
sure,
yeah, that's definitely a sketchy bullpen for me.
Yeah, they will really need Will Warren and Ryan Weathers to step up in relief roles in the playoffs.
What they think they're banking on, and I could see it working out, but that's you just don't know until you see it. So
right,
yeah, we'll wait and see.
Okay, we'll go to the Mariners bullpen, where there aren't many questions, especially with closer Andrés Muñoz. But behind that, it hasn't been as elite as it's been in years past. You got a lot of names that are recognizable, but they're not pitching at the peak of their powers like we've seen in years past. José Ferrer hasn't really taken that next step that we thought he would. Eduard Brizardo looks to be dealing with the effects of overusage from last year. Gabe Spire doesn't have the same strikeout stuff he did when he was one of the best relievers in baseball last year. Sir Anthony Dominguez is struggling with his control, something that he usually does, and so on and so forth with the questions going through that the bullpen, the setup options.
It's been a nightmare recently, and they're really missing Matt Brash, who still seems a couple weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if that's going to be a savior for them. I mean, I really, it just seems like it makes too much sense for them to put in a claim for Paul Sewald. I think,
bring him back.
I know, and I think if you look at the waiver claim, the waiver, it's by record, right? So I think they probably would be the team with the worst record that would be interested. Like, it makes sense that Sewald ends up in Seattle, essentially.
Could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, they need something there because, yeah, I mean, Ferrer's been everyone you just mentioned has been bad like recently. I do like Michael Rucker, but they gave him a chance in the seventh inning tonight, and he blew the lead for them. So it's like, we're just down to, I mean, Bizardo's been terrible lately. Ferrer has not been good lately.
Mm-hmm.
Spire's fine, but he got suspended. He's coming back. Sir Anthony Dominguez has not looked good since he got there. Just not a lot of trust in anyone here.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely see them adding Sewald or another veteran reliever who gets DFA'd at some point, because they desperately need help here at this point.
Yep, that is a fair assessment. Let's go to the Rays. Brian Baker currently leads baseball with 34 saves. Do you think he finishes the year as the MLB leader in saves?
He
is at 30, and so is Mason Miller.
I mean, probably. I we're talking about his velocity's been fluctuating. I wonder if he's starting to hit a bit of a cliff here. This has been a more intense season than he's ever had. So, I still would imagine as long as he's healthy, he does finish the year as the leader in saves, because the Rays team is just a wagon right now, and they're just winning games in all these close fashion, close fashion, giving him a ton of opportunities. And even at the first 2 months, it was, you know, Baker was getting like 70% of the save chances. Now he's just getting all of them. Like, they're not even, you know, toying with the idea of putting him in the seventh or eighth inning again. So, yeah, I mean, he seems locked in. So I'll say he will finish the year. And who had that on their who had that, especially between Riley O'Brien and Brian Baker at 34, 30 saves. I mean, Varland's catching up to them at 25 too. So yeah, it's, you know, it's Baker's, you know, Baker's to lose at this point with 34. That's a pretty big, you know, four save gaps, pretty big. He might be the only guy to get to 40 this year.
Right. I think in the rest of this bullpen too, it sort of has that same issue that the Yankees have, where it doesn't really look playoff tested. It doesn't really look like it's going to dominate in the playoffs. I trust Brian Baker. I trust Garrett Clevenger, but Kevin Kelly's a pitch to contact guy. Tyler Wells isn't playoff tested, even though he should be pretty good. Cam Boozer has been very dominant, but he also doesn't have a lot of postseason experience. And then beyond that, you got pretty unknown, underwhelming guys like Legumina, Mats, Roycroft, and Grove. So I don't feel like this bullpen is one that goes into the playoffs and just dominates.
No, I think you're gonna you're gonna also though. I mean, think about this though. If you get, and I don't know, we're still waiting to hear back on what's going on with Griffin Jacks, but say Jacks ends up coming back into the.
It looks like he's gonna be fine. I think he's gonna be back throwing again on Friday.
Okay, that would be good. But you could, I mean, hypothetically, if you have Rasmussen, Peralta, McClanahan, I don't know who your fourth is, but maybe, again, like Jacks could be in your bullpen. Seymour could be in your bullpen, potentially. So I think, you know, adding those guys with Kelly, Clevenger, Wells, Boozer's been such a surprise and so good for them. I think their bullpen will be fine. I think that's
okay.
Like you said, I get what you're saying, that there's not a lot of, like, the there's aren't playoff arms. Like Kelly's not a, you know, not a big strikeout guy,
right?
Wells has been lately, but typically isn't a big strikeout guy. So yeah, I could see that being an issue, but I don't think that will be their problem in the postseason.
All right, second to last team we have is the Rangers, and I'll be looking for someone to emerge as someone to trust behind Jacob Latz. Latz has had an incredible breakout season, but nobody's really emerged from this bullpen as a guy that we can trust going into 2027. This looks like the ace bullpen, where the Rangers are just going to have to rebuild it from scratch this offseason if they want to have a chance at contention in 2027. Do you see any guys emerging from here? And if so, who?
Rangers are in the playoffs right now, and this is what their bullpen looks like. And it's just,
they're not going to make it. I don't believe it.
They're right now in a wild card spot, but yes, I mean,
yeah, the 57% chance to make the playoffs. I don't believe that they're going to pull it off.
I mean, the way that they maneuvered at the deadline, yeah, they don't deserve to, and it doesn't seem like they, you know, I get that. I mean, so they've had some, like, Peyton Gray and Robbie Alstrom have looked good for them lately, but they're both kind of, I'm not ready to be like, those two guys are going to be, you know, future, you know, locked in setup guys for them. You know, Shea Silseth is what he is. There's a reason the Angels just kind of gave him up for nothing. Mm-hmm. And then behind that, it's, you know, the journeyman, you know, veteran guys that they have there. So yeah, it's like Gray and Alstrom, and Cole Wynn isn't really interesting. You know, Robert Garcia still exists, I guess. He's still here. I don't know if he's going to pitch this year or not. That was a guy that they had high hopes for, obviously. It would be nice to get him back next year and give, especially if Latz sticks in the bullpen as the closer, giving them Garcia to be a left-handed setup guy for them would be nice. I'd take him over Alstrom when he's healthy. But yeah, right hand. I mean, is this going to be the off season they finally put some money towards some bullpen help, or some sort of, even if it's a trade, just putting some sort of, you know, something towards helping that bullpen out? Cause it's,
yeah,
I mean, they're lucky that Latz is what he is. Cause I don't think, I mean, that they definitely did not plan on this, on Jacob Latz being this dominant closer. They lucked out there, but now build on it and, like, give him some help.
Right. I'd love to see Emiliano Teodo and Gavin Collier get back to the majors, because those are two guys that I think have more potential than a lot of the guys in this bullpen. So I'd love to see if they could sort of establish themselves ahead of 2027.
Yeah. I mean, there's guys in either that are hurt or in AAA that there's stuff there. There's just, yeah, trying to get them the command under control. But yeah, at some point you have to, you know, let them sink or swim. They have to get a chance. So,
right.
Hopefully sooner rather than later.
Okay. And lastly, we've got the Toronto Blue Jays. Louis Varland is locked into the closer role, but how do we feel about the rest of the supporting cast there? The Blue Jays are not completely out of playoff contention, 12% chance to make the playoffs. So there's still a chance there. You're saying there's a chance, but behind Louis Varland, and it's a little bit questionable. We've seen Tyler Rogers sort of lose his control. I think you were telling me before the podcast, 6 walks in the last 3 games, and he walked 7 guys in all of 2025. Yeah, and crazy. Behind that, it's a lot of questionable guys. Mason Flaherty has potential. Braden Fisher, Brendan Little, we saw them all have good seasons last year, but these weren't guys that they could trust in the playoffs. And yeah, I don't know if we can trust them in September.
Yeah, I mean, I like Flaherty, but there's definitely some inconsistency there with him. Fisher hasn't been as good this year. I mean, they turned to Spencer Miles tonight for a save with Varland off. They went to Miles, which is interesting. Okay. I think there's a sinker slider profile there that could to work out for him as a reliever, maybe, but not like anything earth shattering. Not someone I would trust as the seventh or eighth inning guy, especially on a team like the Blue Jays, who, you know, they're going to want to compete next year.
Right.
They're not looking for some sort of rebuild. So, I do think that they're, you know, they missed out on Yimi Garcia being able to make it back this year, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then trading away Hoffman. So yeah, they'll be in the market again. They're probably not going to make a big splash as far as relievers go, but, you know, definitely expect them to add to this bullpen, in the off season, especially. And probably add one or two pieces the way that they like to, you know, have pitching depth there. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason with them.
All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of the podcast. We just made it through every single American League team. Next week, we'll talk about the National League storyline. So if you, the listener, have any pressing questions you have about a National League team, feel free to reach out on Twitter or on the Pitcherlist Discord. We will either answer that question via the question wherever it's asked, or we'll answer it on the next podcast. So if you are looking for some National League storylines, we've got you covered next week. But Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and let everybody know what you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me at I Am Rick Graham on socials. Currently working on same things as usual with reliever roundups daily, reliever streamer daily, and every Tuesday night putting out the save plus holds and holds rankings. We got a couple more weeks still, you know, and I know we're getting close to playoffs and fantasy leagues. So yeah, it's kind of at that point where it's make or break for some of these relievers. And especially when you're trying to stash guys on an IL at this point, it's like outside of Palencia, I don't know, Devin Williams, I guess now maybe, Justin Martinez. Yeah, maybe. Like, those are, it's kind of all the only guys I'm interested. I think Helsley at this point we're moving on from.
Right. Okay. Well, you can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can follow me at Jake Crumpler. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I'm doing the weekend editions of the SP Roundup as well as the Plus Pitch podcast. So you can see my work there. I also do 4 days a week of the First Pitch podcast. Both of those podcasts you can find on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. You can also find more of my work over at baseballhq.com, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, Diamondbacks, and Angels. And that's everything. You can find all my links to all my work at crumplerbaseball.com. But yeah, got plenty on my plate right now. But that's going to do it for this episode 171 of the In the Pen Podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.